My name is Jim Judges and I'm a senior academic technologist at the University of Warwick, and this is the LDCU Talking Online Learning podcast. In this interview, I met up with Associate Professor David Fox from the Chemistry Department. He's an experienced tutor and confident user of technology. And in this fascinating discussion that you're about to hear, we reflect on the move to online learning and the experience for staff and students. We also consider some of the many challenges of working in a blended manner and consider some interesting questions, including how long should a one-hour lecture be and what happens when you move from a favoured and well-practiced delivery model to something new. We also talk about a range of tools and techniques. So without further ado, let's get stuck in and have a listen to this interesting and revealing discussion.
Jim, my name is David Fox. I'm an academic in the chemistry department, and I've been teaching organic chemistry since I got here in 2006. And I've been senior tutor on and off for about 10 years. I am at the moment. I've done a range of other jobs, head of teaching section and that kind of thing as well over the time. So I've had quite a lot of experience at various bits of, you know, delivering the course to undergraduates. It's good to have a chat about this type of thing, particularly in the light of, you know, what we've learned in the last 12 months, really, about
that's
technology,
right.
and about how that's changed things. Yeah,
definitely.
It's a really interesting time.
It's an interesting time, as you say, because we're 12 months on from the planning we were having to do last year. So we can certainly reflect on how that's gone and any lessons learned. So do you have a general view on, big question, but how has the year been, and how have you found the move to online? I'm interested to hear about the challenges, the things that have worked and the things that perhaps haven't been so good.
Absolutely. It's certainly, as you say, been it's been quite a steep learning curve. That phrase has been used a lot in the last 12 months. I suppose I've been quite fortunate. I've been interested in music, audio, you know, audio recording, editing, that kind of thing for many years, just as sort of an amateur doing the things that I do at home. So actually, when confronted with things like recording and editing and things like that, I was actually already pretty comfortable with that kind of thing. So this whole world of moving online, I didn't find, you know, the technical side of it too intimidating. I think the academic side of it, I think, was different, though. I mean, that was really, you know, an odd thing. I'd been talking to people I share modules with, that type of thing, about flipping lectures, right? Flipping modules, as we call it, for a very, very long time. This idea that, you know, instead of standing up at the front and you spend the time just, you know, lecturing the material in a traditional way, that you'd ask somebody to read something or to look at a video before the lecture, and then you'd use that time, that face-to-face time, in order to sort of go through problems and answer questions and sort of have a more interactive experience with the students, maybe with them working in groups, or, you know, sort of, you know, that whole kind of, you know, I would describe it as a flat room experience, you know, where you wander about rather than a sort of a lecture room experience with a banked audience up in front of you. So, you know, that's something we've been talking about doing for some time, and there was quite a lot of inertia about not doing that, mainly because, you know, if you've been lecturing for some years, you're quite happy with lecturing, doesn't seem to be broken, why fix it, that kind of thing. And I think that this situation has catalyzed that change. So in some senses, that whole kind of every cloud has a silver lining thing, I quite like that. You know, I'm quite keen to try and get something good out of what's actually happened.
Well, can I ask you something specific then? So how has information been provided then? What sorts of things would the students have done, and what tools have you used?
Yeah, so traditionally, almost all the chemistry modules have been sort of, you know, lectures, and then sometimes we've had small group tutorials, so that's like sort of six students, and then sometimes run workshops as well. And those workshops often are kind of somewhere between 25, 30 students in a room as well. That's like a flat room thing, as we'd call that. And yeah, a bit of mixture of those things. We have labs as well, but we won't talk about labs today. It's difficult to do those in a virtual world, even though we have tried at various points. So it's a, you know, we've had that whole kind of mixture. So what we've done this year, and this was like a big deal in our department, I'm sure it was everywhere, but sort of in sort of August, September time last year, where we were having to convince academics who'd been giving face-to-face lectures for many years to not only record that lecture, you know, it just themselves in the office. So they had to get some technology, they had to buy a microphone, and they had to kind of, you know, get to grips with some basic editing software, maybe, or just basic recording software, and then deliver their lectures and then present those via Moodle as the primary platform there, but also intersperse the lectures with problems, with maybe the answers to those problems as well, which could either be written or again in video format, and so it became this sort of a lot more of this sort of online e-learning model. But at the same time, and this was quite difficult to organize, but at the same time, particularly in term one, we were then running face-to-face workshops, obviously number limited at the time. We weren't allowed more than 25 people. So typically I was on a module in year three and there were 150 students. So in a day I had to run 6 one-hour sessions with up to 25 people in each session, just to kind of answer questions. So it was the kind of this beginning of this flip model, this idea that they'd be able to come back and we'd have set questions and said, you know, look at this lecture, do these problems, and then next week that they would come and answer, you know, and ask any questions they have and be able to have that sort of more interactive problem discussion type of sessions. I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, we can talk about what works and what didn't work. We can do that a lot. What I learned, of course, was despite our best efforts, actually taking a one-hour lecture, recording it, and there being 1 hour, I know it's officially 50 minutes, so let's just call it a one-hour lecture, right? You know, taking that one-hour lecture, recording it, putting it on Moodle, even if you've chopped it up into small bits with associated problems, and then saying, okay, you do all this, and then next week we'll come to a session. Well, I can tell you, because students are sometimes fearful of looking perhaps ill-informed or behind, many of them didn't come.
Mm.
In fact, yeah. At one point, for those of you who know the geography of the university, I ended up having a face-to-face session for up to 25 students in the new big lecture theatre in Oculus, the big one, in which only 2 students came. And what I learned very quickly there was actually coming to a lecture takes an hour, right? You know, you sit in a lecture, it's an hour. At the end of that hour, it stopped.
Yep.
You leave, you do something else. If you present an undergraduate with a one-hour lecture, I have no idea how long it can sometimes take, right? I've heard claims of it takes up to 4, 5, even 6 hours to watch that lecture because they will pause it and they will go back. Now, I'm not saying this is a problem per se, pedagogically, but I'm saying it takes a lot more than 1 hour. So they didn't have time to do all the material and do all the problems. And so they didn't come to the face-to-face session. I was talking to one of my graduate students about this, who's an MSc student working in my lab, and she'd been, you know, wasn't an undergraduate anymore, wasn't going to lectures. And she just said something which genuinely I don't think I'll ever forget. And, you know, I was talking about term one and the problems we were having in term one with, you know, what we thought was engagement, which was probably just turning up to these face-to-face sessions and saying, oh, you know, the problem here is that students, you know, I think they're trying to do too much. You know, they're actually trying to perhaps understand the material in a way that normally we wouldn't expect at this time, right? There's a long time for all the exams. The exams are actually the end of term two for our third years. And there's a decent revision period before that. And that's when normally we'd expect students to come back with us with problems during that sort of 3 weeks of revision time before the exam. And the student, my MSc student, who, you know, been an undergraduate at Warwick, she said, well, of course, nobody ever understands anything before Christmas. And honestly, I was rocked back on my heels and I thought, wow. So what you're telling me is that the students come to the lectures and they sit through the lectures and they look at the stuff, and at the end of 50 minutes they stand up and walk out, and to be honest, if they've understood any of it, that's a bonus, but many of them won't have understood anything at all. And it's only when they get to the revision period that suddenly that they actually do understand this, right? So having sat through my day with my 6 sessions and literally, you know, hardly anybody turning up, I mean, I got no more than, I think in one session I may have got 10, but you know, maybe an average of 5 students from 6 sessions. So maybe 30 people came from the entire year. I realized suddenly that I had to change things. So right. I learned a big lesson,
Just to be clear then, those workshops that you ran, did they run all year or just for that term? And so did you also have to run some online, just to clarify?
So yes, we I was giving what was probably, well, it was 5 lectures worth of material.
Yeah.
And normally that would be done in a little over a week for that particular module, because it's a part of a module. But what we decided to do was sort of front end load all of the lecture materials the first 4 weeks and then have all the workshops in the latter 4 weeks, you know. So we'd sort of staggered the workshops. There were some online sessions as well. So we delivered online sessions for people who were unable to attend in person. Some people were shielding and some people were just too far away. And that's all absolutely fine. That day when I did those 6 sessions, I remember now, actually, the last one, I did 5 face-to-face and the last one was online. I got about 80, 90 people in the last session. Yeah. But I can tell you, not a single camera went on, not a single microphone went on. It was November. It was I ran it between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. at night. The sun had gone down. I was in my office. It was dark. I felt like Bob Harris doing the midnight slot on Radio 2. It was this sort of, you know, bumbling around midnight, talking quietly. Okay, guys, we're going to talk about this reaction here now. Anybody got any questions? No. Okay, right. You know, and so it was a very, very, very odd experience. It felt like radio broadcasting, because I wasn't really getting any feedback.
No.
Session.
No, that's...
And
that's,
I'm not blaming the students. They don't want, you know, it's only the very brave ones that go, I don't understand this, in front of their entire peers, and, you know, and then go and then come up with a good question.
Sorry to interrupt. So I suppose, can we conclude then that the students feel a bit safer online because they can just hide and they don't have to turn the microphone on camera? Whereas if they're in a classroom, you're going to know if they've read or understood the stuff if you happen to pick on them. So they feel more vulnerable. So maybe that's obvious. But then also there's the travel, isn't there? And maybe, I suppose, the worry over the pandemic itself, potentially, and being in a room possibly by then. Oh, I don't know.
No, I think you're right on all counts there. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's easy to hide. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. You know, they don't want to be challenged sometimes. If they're particularly behind with the work, they've just come. Maybe they haven't even looked at the questions. They've just come to look at the answers, you know. I've got all the answers online anyway.
Sure.
But what I'm saying is that they just want to come and, I mean, for many of them, they had a very unstructured day. I think that's a thing to talk about.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
The lack of face-to-face, I think, had a really detrimental effect on people's ability to organize their own time.
Yes.
When we've organized your life for you with a timetable, come here, do that, go home, do this, sit there, do that question, yes, go to that lab, whatever, it's very easy. You kind of just go with the flow, you go with your friends, you get to chat with your friends between the sessions, you feel as though you're having some sort of student experience, and, you know, you're just going along with everybody else and you feel part of a thing. When you're sitting at home in your bedroom and you've got no timetable, somebody's just sent you some links to some videos and then said, I'll speak to you next Thursday about this. Can't be the most positive experience, can it? We did our best, but, you know,
yes,
this is the problem, right? I mean,
what about that? Sorry to interrupt then. So what about you realized it wasn't working.
Yeah.
There was a problem with the model. Yeah. What did you do to try
Well, I can absolutely. So let me talk about that. So
yes.
So I have a lecture. I had this module. I'll talk about another thing later on about running big workshops. Which I also did. I suppose I should talk about, that's my third year module. I did a second year module at the end of term one as well, but that was a very much a workshop based thing, and we can come back to that. And then I did another sort of lecture series, sort of more traditional lecture series module for year two. I did that in term two.
Okay.
So by the time we got to Christmas, I hadn't recorded any of my term two material. The reason I hadn't done this was because I just had so much going on in term one. I had 2 big, kind of quite serious things to do in term one in terms of teaching, and I just hadn't done my term two stuff. I'm kind of glad I hadn't, because if I had, I would have probably deleted it all, or given it such a serious re-edit, I might as well have just re-recorded it. So term two, again, I had 7 lectures worth of material with associated notes. I've always always had the notes online, full set of notes online, so people can just read along with, you know, we follow, kind of follow along. I always lecture with the notes in front of me, but the same notes that I have online, so that's always easy for the students. There's a whole set of questions in there and everything. So the year two module been sort of going quite successfully for some years, but I decided to record the lectures. And what I realized very quickly from that early conversation we referred to before about students taking a long time with videos, what I realized was really I had to change the focus of the video. The video wasn't going to be a very slow, ponderous, measured, in-depth analysis anymore. I'm not saying it was going to be like an advert, a trailer, right? But it was going to be kind of somewhere in between. So what I did was I basically talked about everything that I would have talked about in the lecture, but I did it what I would describe as very succinctly, and I gave it a very tight edit. So I had seven lectures in year two, which were traditionally, you know, 50-minute lectures. And I'd have to look at the numbers, but I know that the longest one was probably no more than 20 minutes, and the shortest one was 12 minutes. So I managed to deliver and edit a 50-minute lecture in 12 minutes, right? And I said everything I wanted to say. I didn't say it twice. There weren't any pauses. I'll tell you what else I edited out. And I'm kind of, this is a bit of a shame, right? So you stand often in a lecture theatre. And if you've given them lecture material before, sometimes if you're not in the mood, it can be a bit of a, I'll say a trial, but you kind of, sometimes you're sitting there thinking, oh, you know. So over the years, I've developed what I will discover as an extremely well-crafted series of spontaneous jokes, right? And these jokes become sort of milestones in the lecture in my mind. This is the bit where I tell the joke about this, you know, and it's often a play on words or a stupid situation or a random thing. Often there'll be one right in the middle of the 50 minutes because I just want to give them a break for a minute or something. Well, that went. All that's gone. All the jokes have gone. Now, I'm not saying the jokes are good. The jokes are terrible. I mean, they are deliberately designed to kind of elicit groans. Do you see what I'm saying? You are kind of just trying to, you know, kind of let people, you know, roll their eyes, yes, you know, in that, yes, kind of way in the middle of a lecture just to go, oh, the man at the front is this, you know, he looks like a dull person, but actually he's an idiot. You know, thank God for that. You know, that kind of thing. So I've got no problem with that at all. I practice them on my daughter at home. You know, it's proper dad joke stuff, you know. So anyway, the point is that all those have gone. So what you've now got is, even though it's short and I think pretty digestible, I've still got the problems there and I've still got the answers there. And in fact, for that module, I've been giving this module this material in various forms. It's now on its third module code, actually. I've been giving this material since 2008. It's all there. So what I've in these videos, it's more like an introduction. It's I just go through everything once, very briefly, and then people have got the notes. They have the opportunity to ask questions, and indeed we ran the workshops again. We did in term two, we did them all online. We had to after Christmas. It was close after Christmas when there was the big wave of coronavirus cases, so we didn't have face-to-face. We had them online. They seem to go a bit better online, I think. Okay. Mainly because the students were a bit more used to it by that stage.
Yes.
After Christmas, and often I think they were starting to get, you know, it was getting closer.
Interesting what you say, because I suppose you're giving the students the information they need. It's in a condensed format. It may be the 12 minutes will still take them an hour to watch, but it's only going to take an hour. But do you feel bad? Is there a student out there, or do you think you've served the majority on what the students want, or do you feel bad that you've had to chop out some of your personality and character from that?
I'm sure many people would say that chopping out as much of my personality as possible is probably a bonus, but seriously, I'm hoping next year to be able to deliver the same flipped experience. So I've said publicly, and I'll say again, I never want to give another university lecture in person like that. I don't want to do it anymore. I've realized these videos are great for delivering the material, but I want to use those timetable sessions. I don't want to do less work, and I don't want to do less contact time with the kids. Like, absolutely not. No, I want to do that, but I want to do those kind of workshoppy flat room discussion, lights up, wander around, you guys work in a group on this problem, you guys work on this problem, you know, that kind of manage, maybe a bit of teamwork in there to to go through the problems. Yes. And so then, you know, watch the video at home or on the bus or whatever. It's only 12 minutes. You can watch it on the bus on the way in, right? And then you can come, and then today we will discuss these problems, you know, look at the stuff, and then today we'll do some exam questions or some other questions or whatever that we feel is a good thing, and then they can ask questions, stick their hand up, all that kind of thing. Yes. I'm really hoping we can go back to kind of big rooms, big attendance, have people, you know, sitting either in groups. We can do it in lecture theatres if you like. I don't mind. I can walk upstairs.
Yeah.
Whatever. But so to get that face-to-face time, because that'll do two things. Firstly, it'll actually kind of force them to come and do the thing that we want, which is kind of good. The second thing is all that student experience that they had, and that kind of when they, you know, they came and they had an hour doing this, and then they walked across campus and they had an hour doing that, and then maybe a third hour, and then they had a cup of coffee and a lunch, and maybe they then went and did a lab or something. Whatever that is, that'll be there. So I want to have that face-to-face experience. I want to rebuild that student kind of experience that they had, for them to have a managed timetable, because suddenly having to turn up to things, that'll govern when they watch the videos, and if we don't make the videos too long, they'll be able to do that in advance easily. And that way, I think we will get the best of both worlds. I really want to see this as being something where, you know, the COVID has catalyzed this flipping of the stuff, and that we can use all the technology to our benefit.
This is good. And what if there are a few students, a small percentage or bigger, students who say, well, actually, we're happy to come in for the laboratories because that's hard to do at home, but I'd like to do this part of what you're describing at home. Would you resist or prefer not to deliver an option that's online? So would you prefer to insist that students are in a physical room, or would you be prepared to offer that for those students that wanted it? What do you think?
I'm happy to kind of deliver what, in some senses, what the students want. I suppose in some senses I also have a role to try and do what I think is best for them. Sorry, that's going to sound really parental, but I've heard so much this year with my senior tutor hat on about lack of engagement, about mental health issues associated with not coming to campus, with not doing this, that I want to do my best to encourage people to come. However, if people can't come, I'm sure we will have an online provision. I'm just aware, though, that if we do a team session for an hour online, that it kind of won't be the same. I'm sure we'll have online sessions as well, because they're pretty easy to do. They're incredibly easy to timetable, because we don't have to book rooms. And as long as the whole team system doesn't overload, I'm sure we can do that, right? So that, you know, we've managed this year with that kind of thing. So in a way, I'm happy to do additional sessions online, but I want to encourage people to come, not because I'm to see me, to see their friends, to have a life, to actually, you know, maybe does it look more like value for money for them? Many of them, I really think they want to feel part of a community, part of a team, part of a bunch of people doing this stuff, not somebody by themselves in their bedroom struggling.
Yeah.
You know, as adults, you know, I think maybe we get used to this. And I think for some people, this, you know, not actually having to come in has been a relief, maybe. And the online thing has been fine.
Can I just move things on slightly and just ask whether or not you have any other reflections in terms of the student experience? And you said that we might not say too much about the practical side, but it is the case that all of your students will have experienced some practical activity by the end of the year, at least, I believe. Is that right?
True. Yes.
Yeah. So they will have had some of that they will hopefully have benefited and enjoyed, dare I suggest. But do you have any other feedback from the student experience? Any observations on what's worked well, what they've liked, and anything else?
Yeah, I think the ones who come to things when we have been doing face-to-face sessions have really appreciated it. And so, yeah, I'll talk about two things. I do actually want to talk a little bit about the workshop thing before Christmas as well.
Yeah, please.
Because I've been running a module which is almost entirely workshopped. So we'd have long sessions, like 3-hour sessions on a Friday afternoon. It would only run for like 4 weeks at the end of term one. And we had to do it this time, but we had to do it under kind of COVID safe situations, and so they had no more than 25 people in the room, and people were sort of 2 meters apart, and people had masks on, and all that. And in the past, people have sat in small groups around tables and they discussed the stuff, and that really didn't happen. And actually, and the room was much larger, and so there was this kind of ambient background noise and people could speak. You know, I've got this theory that you need 50 people in a room, or maybe 30, some of you 30 and 50 people in a room, for the background noise to be large enough for you to be able to turn to your mate and ask any question you like without being worried about being overheard. Right. That's one of the reasons I want to get back to big rooms, because actually, you know, there is that kind of much more, you suddenly feel a lot more relaxed when you're in a big room. That didn't work. Right. And I don't think, you know, when we did that before Christmas, and, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, well, instead of having 50 people sessions, we'll have 35 people sessions. And then as long as everyone's 2 meters apart, it's fine. Suddenly you've just killed the ultimately killed the point of the process. What we've had to do is, because we've got to have so many people through, we've actually had a morning session and an afternoon session. So the labs have started at like 8:30 and gone all the way till 6:30. So we've had to have 2 entire sets of staff, 2 entire sets of lab technicians, 2 entire sets of students every day just to go through the process. The people who've organized it, by the way, have done an amazing job. Just to thank them publicly, Stephen Bromfield in particular, just thought I'd say that out loud while I can. Done an amazing job. And the students, I think, have actually enjoyed it. I've been in there and they've, you know, many of them said, actually unprompted, which is not bad from an 18-year-old, thank you. Actually, thank you for organising this.
What do you think about going forward then? We've said a little bit about that. What would you be looking forward to carrying on with? You've said that you don't want to deliver another lecture. You're going to carry on recording your content. But is there anything else that you're perhaps going to carry on with? Or assuming we can choose what we want to do, is there anything you'll look forward to ditching maybe?
Yeah, so that module I did before Christmas with the workshops, I want to go back to how it was. Absolutely. It was great. The lab, I was in there the other day and I said to the guys, do you know something? I quite like this. I reckon we can do some like compressed lab sessions like this. I think this seems to be working quite well. I think perhaps it was the wrong thing to say at that point. The look on their faces was one of, we are barely holding this together. So, you know, maybe we'll go back to a slightly more traditional lab thing there. But for the standard modules, as I said, the lectures, I definitely want to carry on with some of this. I think, you know, that, I mean, we could talk about exams if you want.
Funny that you should say that, because I'm definitely interested in that, because one, the hot topic really is the online exam. What are we examining anyway? And how do we guarantee the security and reassurance that we are assessing that student's work? So, yeah, do you want to say something about the experience of Moot Online and how things might go and what we might do to address some of the problems?
I would like to point out that, you know, while we have said to students, there's a whole bunch of issues with this, though, moving to online. Well, we'll have to define what an online exam is in a minute, but let's just talk about what I'll call remote exams, right, to start off with.
Yeah.
So a student sits at home and does this exam. So, and then we have required people to sit the exam, write their answers out on paper, take a picture of that paper, turn it into a PDF and upload it. That's what we wanted people to do. And traditionally, we take a 1.5-hour exam paper, which is what, you know, which is normally, let's say for a module, we've got a 1.5-hour exam in previous years. So this year, what we decided to do was be generous, turn that into a 2-hour exam. And then we gave people another 45 minutes in order to take their pictures, turn them into PDFs and upload them. Well, being one of the people on the mitigating circumstances panel in our department, I've spent an enormous amount of time looking at cases of people having uploaded at, you know, let's say it was a 9:00 start, you know, 11:44, 11:45, 11:46 uploads. Suddenly what's acceptable, what's not, the university recommended as mandated or recommended at least, you know, a hard cutoff on giving a mark of 0. Yet we've got cases where people are showing that they've got IT problems. You know, did it really take 45 minutes to do this? Did they really actually spend half an hour of that time just answering the questions? We have no way of knowing. So I really want to try and go back to what I'll describe as proctored exams or monitored exams. And I don't care if that's done through an IT platform or it's done via actually face to face people coming to a room.
Yes.
I think it should be a lot easier, both in terms of the time management and the collusion problem.
Yeah.
Could sort of sort that out.
That's interesting. Well, it's interesting you say that because, of course, the university is grappling with that. I think the IT solution and the online proctored has certain issues with it. As perhaps going back to students in exam rooms, let's see, maybe using their own devices is one halfway house, but still being supervised. Is there anything, there is a challenge for science and mathematical engineering type subjects where the answer is a particular answer. Is there anything you can do in terms of the design of the exam to reduce the possibility of collusion? So can students have different questions, or what's the point? Do you have a view? Do we have to ask do we have to ask them questions that have a correct answer because we can look it up on Google these days anyway?
Oh, well, I think I think it's possible to ask people questions that have correct answers that are ungoogleable, right? Anybody who thinks that's not possible, they just need to wake up and try harder, right? Sorry. Right. Okay. Right. So no. I think it's a fair question, but I think it's an important point. The issue about whether or not we have to ask everybody the same question, of course, is a very interesting one. So the module I do before Christmas, the one with the workshops, has it's all done on assessed work, which they actually don't do in the section, they do after. And they all have the same data. They all have the same stuff to assess and to answer, right? I've got another module which has got it's actually an Excel data analysis task. But my way of dealing with that is, even though the methods are similar, is to give pretty much everybody different data. And there are various ways within the university to do that. In fact, I can tell you, I use the old mark release pages. So everybody, when they log in, you know, so everybody gets their own data with that way. So, right. So, yeah. So students having individual pages, be it via Moodle or Site Builder or whatever, is a great way of saying, well, that's your data. And you turn up with somebody else's data. If you turn up with the correct answer to somebody else's data, you're getting a cross. You know, that's it. You know, so. Yeah. And the students know this. And okay, so because even if they discuss the method between each other, I don't care about that because I've already told them how to do it. Yes. I just need them to do it and to kind of push the boundaries a little bit on that method during the assessment. You've raised a really important point there, by the way, about the difference between an online exam and a remote exam. I'd love the idea of people being able to bring devices, iPads, laptops, whatever, to a room to then sit an exam and log on. Because traditionally, our chemistry exams have been based on pens and bits of paper. And now they're still based on pens and bits of paper because we're taking pictures of them and uploading them to PDFs. If we actually said, actually, no, we're going to do online exams. So in other words, electronic exams in that sense, you know, that works well for chemistry, right? I mean, this idea of being able to look at molecules or structures in three dimensions, spin them about, look at this and measure that. I mean, the possibilities suddenly become endless, right? And the more stuff we can do to do individual data sets. Imagine trying to do a paper exam where everybody gets a different question. Can you just imagine the carnage?
That's right? True.
But you could do it online really easily.
That is true. Am I right, though? I suppose that in chemistry, you do have a certain requirement for certain questions and certainly modules where you need students to be able to draw and represent reaction mechanisms. So that can be a challenge.
Yeah, you're completely right. The so-called curly arrows, for those of you chemists, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. We need people to be able to draw. There are and have been a number of so-called solutions online. People have tried really hard with this. It's really tough. It's really tough to genuinely, you know, it must be, I'm not saying it's artistic, but you genuinely do want to know where the arrow starts and where it finishes and how many there are on the page at the same time. And anything that you produce that isn't really drawing.
Yeah.
Actually becomes like giving like multiple choice is a problem. You know, you don't want it multiple choice. You don't want it to be somehow limited by the technology.
Now, sadly, because of time, we will be heading towards the end of the conversation. But would you have any tips or advice for perhaps where to get started or things to focus on or things to prioritize?
First thing, very simply, one. buy a decent microphone. I know that seems like the simplest thing in the world, but when I started doing this session, when I started doing this recording this year, we had a big staff meeting in the department. And I remember standing up and saying, "Yo, this is this, right? You thinking it's all about the screen, half it's your voice. If you're going to sound a bit tinny and you're using your inbuilt microphone on your laptop, maybe it's good, maybe it's not, test it. Or you're using like the inbuilt, you know, microphone that comes in a pair of kind of standard earbuds or something. Who knows how good those are? One, buy yourself a decent microphone.
Yes.
Two, get used to using recording software. I'm a big fan of OBS, which is a free online, it's a free package. It works on Mac, it works on Windows, it works on Linux. Get involved in that. It's really nice. It's really powerful. It was designed by gamers so that they could stream their games live onto things like Twitch and things like that. But it's a great platform. And the other thing is, yeah, get happy with editing. Editing is a tough game. It can take a lot of time, takes longer than recording, but it's the difference between something looking amateurish and something looking professional. So please try with that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much for your insight and usual enthusiasm and for reflecting on the year. I suppose none of us know exactly what's heading our way next year, but let's hope things continue to improve and we get to do many of the things you've been talking about. Thanks for your time this afternoon, Fox.
Thanks, Jim. It's been great. Thank you. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and thanks again to David Fox for sharing his experiences with us. The Learning Design Consultancy Unit, or LDCU, here at Warwick, was established to support staff with designing and adapting teaching and learning for online and blended delivery. I hope this discussion and others in this podcast series will prove useful as a way of capturing and sharing experiences. None of us have all the answers, and in some cases, we're still trying to work out what the questions are. But by listening to each other and sharing ideas and experiences, we can hopefully continue to grow, develop, and improve. Thanks for listening.